Hello, everybody. Welcome to the very first episode of Dark, Dangerous, and Deadly. I'm your host, Bridget M. Today, we're going to talk about Louis Garavito. So before I begin, I'd like to add a disclaimer. This episode covers the rape, torture, and murder of children. So viewers or listeners' discretion is strongly advised. Okay, so let's begin. Today, we're going to talk about Louis Garavito. Louis Garavito was born January 25th in 1957 in Geneva, Colombia. He was the firstborn son of Rosa Cubillos and Manuel Garavito. Louis and his six siblings had a really rough life. So Rosa, his mother, she was a prostitute, and she would bring her clients to the house. Why? I have no idea. And so her clients would be at the house, you know, with her doing what they do. And Louis's father, I guess, you know, he was okay with this. Some people speculate that he was the one that was forcing her to do this. But he would basically allow these clients to molest or abuse Louis. And, you know, I mean, as a child, he's thinking, I mean, that it's okay, you know, this is mom and dad, these are the people that you look up to, and they're the ones that are allowing this to happen to him. So these clients would be able to, you know, pretty much do whatever they wanted to him. And it doesn't stop there, because Louis's father was very abusive to him and his six siblings. And he was an alcoholic, so he would, you know, come home drunk, and then he would basically just beat them, because, I mean, why not, right? Like, these are the things that, you know, if you wanted to create a murderer, this is what you do. He also, you know, Louis's father, I'm sorry, also allowed neighbors and family friends to rape and abuse Louis. Now, I looked into seeing if he also allowed them to do this to Louis's siblings, but I couldn't find any information on the siblings or, you know, if this happened to them as well. But so this is the beginning of Louis's childhood. He winds up, you know, just enduring so much as a child, and all, you know, at the hands of the two people that are supposed to love and protect him. So, I mean, it's really sad. So Louis winds up running away from home. He runs away, and at this point, he only has about 5 years of schooling, which is not very much. So he's not really able to take care of himself, and he doesn't have as much knowledge as, you know, most people that live on their own. So he's just kind of getting by, you know, finding food, finding a little spot to sleep. And some guy sees him, and this man is like really nice. And he's like, hey, listen, you know, I will give you some food. I'll give you a nice safe place to sleep. And, you know, just to help you out. So Louis obviously is very excited about this, because he doesn't have anywhere to go. He doesn't have a job. You know, he's too young. So he goes with this man. And the man leads him to an abandoned warehouse that is where he rapes and beats Louis. And I just, it's just one bad event after the next. And, you know, I know that a lot of people are going to make comments about me, like, making excuses for him. And I'm not doing that at all. You know, when he becomes an adult, he clearly knows what is right and wrong. But when you're a child, you look to your parents, you know, as an example of what you're supposed to be when you become an adult. And for him, all he sees is every adult around him being abusive and being a child molester. So, like I said, again, I'm not using this as an excuse for him. But I do think that maybe if he had a different upbringing and different events in his life, and he didn't endure all of this, maybe he would have looked at the world in a different way. So back to This guy takes him. He brutally rapes him. And now I have read some stories that this warehouse wasn't an abandoned warehouse. It was like, I guess a warehouse, but there was other kids there. Like it was like a child trafficking ring or something. But there's so many different like mixed articles about it. So I don't know if you guys can find out, you know, what it really was, or if it was just, you know, him and Lewis there, you know, let me know. So I think these hard experiences in his early life would definitely help, or at least push him in that direction of eventually becoming the world's most horrific serial killer. Okay, so now this is all going on when he's about 10 years old. And so after this attack, he is like, you know, he needs some protection. So he decides to like link up with this local gang, you know, a bunch of kids that are also orphaned or, you know, just living on the streets. And they would just go around. They would rob people, usually for like money or food. But if they got other things, then they would just sell it for money so that they can buy the things that they needed. And so this is working out for them. You know, they're all together. And I don't have any arrest records for any of that. But so he winds up continuing that for pretty much the rest of his childhood. And then he's going to become an adult. And as an adult is where things start changing for him. He winds up working, you know, a few different jobs. He can't really keep a job. I mean, they don't really, it's just pretty much speculation on why it is that he can't keep a job, but I'm assuming that, you know, his mind is elsewhere. So he can't really keep a job, and he hops from job to job and place to place in Colombia. And he winds up finding work as a store clerk in Armenia. And he finds a girl, and, you know, he gets into a relationship with her. She has kids, and she's much older. And this will play a bigger part later on in the story. We'll discuss why he was with older women, or an older woman in this case. So when he's working as a store clerk, he's in Armenia, and he starts traveling to this place called Valencia Park. Now, from what I understand, Valencia Park is kind of like, it's just a big child trafficking area. So adults can go there and they pick up whatever kid it is that they want, you know, do what it is that they want with the child. And so this is where Lewis will begin his raping of children. He starts going to Valencia Park on his lunch break. And then he would rape a child there and then go back to work like nothing happened. And he continues this for a long time. Now, this is back in like the late 70s. So, you know, and then a lot of people question about the woman, the older woman that he obviously is having a relationship with, and she has children. So now, from the research that I've done, they kind of break down pedophiles in a few different groups. And some of them, you know, they won't touch the children that are in the family, or, you know, they basically put people in categories. So these are okay children to molest, and then these are not okay children to molest. So these children that, you know, were his stepkids or, you know, whatever, they were in the category of not okay to molest. So he didn't touch them at all. But he continued his raping spree in Valencia Park for quite a while. All right. So you remember I mentioned like the categories quickly. So the category that they say he fits into is called a preferential child molester. Now, this is someone that has no sexual desire for adults at all. And they only want children. So the reason that Lewis, which he said himself, the reason that he would date older women, and I mean much older, like 30, 40 years older than him, he would date these women because he felt like there was no pressure for him to sleep with them, which is something that he said himself absolutely disgusted him so much so that he couldn't even do it. Like, he just could not force himself to be in a sexual relationship with an adult. Like, it just grossed him out. The way normal society would be grossed out with having a sexual relationship with a child. So he is considered a preferential, you know, child molester. And he basically will just be in these relationships with these older women, I guess to kind of play like the role of the family man and to kind of normalize himself, or to appear normal to the rest of society. You know, this was working out for him because people didn't look at him. They didn't think that this is something that he was doing. He had a lot of friends. You know, they used to say that he was, you know, he was the funny guy. He was the one that was always, you know, trying to make people laugh and stuff. So he was really loved and he was really respected by a lot of people. And he had this double life. You know, he was this kind of person in front of his friends and in front of everyone of society. And then, you know, on the other side, he was sneaking to Valencia Park to rape children. So it's, you know, it's crazy. I when I read about him, it was just like the entire story itself is shocking. Like, there's a few people that cover the story and they kind of gloss over a lot of different things. And I read it and I thought, like, you know, as a mother, it just really sickens me. And there's a lot of things that now I can understand why they were glossed over. And I'm not going to go into a lot of detail either with some of the things that he did to the children. But I do think that these are the people that we need to learn about. And, you know, for child abusers, most of the time they get out of jail way before someone that robs a bank or, you know, launders money. So in this country, and, you know, apparently in other countries, which we'll get to, child abusers and sexual abusers or whatever, it's like they get like a little slap on the wrist and there you go. But steal money and now the government wants to go after you. And that's really sad because we should be protecting our children. And our government does not protect children. You know, basically, if you have, you know, especially if you have money, you can get away with a lot. And it's really scary to think that our kids are not held to a higher regard than money. So now in the 80s, Lewis winds up, I guess, hitting a point where just raping the children isn't really satisfying him anymore. He needs more. He needs more gratification. So he starts to torture and mutilate the children. Now, like I said, I'm not going to get into details of the things that he did. If you guys want to go and you want to look it up on your own, I strongly suggest that you do that. But also, please do it with caution because it is a very disgusting thing. So he realizes that, you know, this isn't right. I don't know what made him realize that, but he thinks something's not right with me. This can't be normal behavior. So he seeks out help. Now, let's not give him too much of an applause because he goes and he seeks out this psychiatric help, but not because of the raping and torturing of young kids, or, well, boys. He only did it with boys. No. So he said that he was suicidal and that's why he was seeking out psychiatric help. So, of course, you know, they're trying to help him and he gets released after 33 days. Now, this happens multiple times. He goes in to seek help because he says he's suicidal or because he's depressed or whatever. And they try to help him. And they think that they're getting through to him. But little do they know, that's not the actual problem that he has. And they don't realize that he has a much more sinister way of life. So in 1992 is when he escalates to murder. October 2nd, 1992, he's drinking at a bar and he sees this teenager, catches his eye, you know, and the teenager's name is Juan Carlos. So when Juan Carlos gets up to leave, Lewis decides he's going to follow him. So he follows him. And when Juan Carlos had stopped, I don't know what he stopped for, Lewis took that opportunity to run into a store that was right there, and he went and he bought a butcher knife. So that's normal, you know. He winds up speaking with Juan Carlos and I guess convincing him in some way that, you know, to go with him to, like, you know, he just had that way of talking to kids. So he gets Juan Carlos alone in the woods, and that's where he rapes and murders him. But this is, you know, he really unleashes brutality against poor Juan Carlos, and the torture was so severe that Juan Carlos's teeth were actually missing. They were knocked out of his mouth. That's disgusting. Like, that amount of brutality on a child, you know, his anger that he has is very displaced. I think he projects his insecurities and his hatred for the, you know, the things that happened to him, and he does it in like a retaliation, if that makes sense. Anyway, 6 days later, he winds up raping and killing a 12-year-old boy named Alexander. And just keeps going from there. He winds up moving over to Bogota and he kills 8 more boys. Like, he's just really racking it up now. Then in 1994, he kills a 13-year-old boy named Jaime Gonzalez. He will have racked up altogether by the end of 1994. He will have killed 27 more children. And this is not including rapes. These are including just the murders. He will also kill 4 more boys in 1995. I couldn't find out the names of those boys. I apologize. Now, in Boyaca, a boy is, you know, he goes missing. They're looking for him. I guess this boy had family. And they do find him. But it's too late by the time that they find him. When they do find him, now, please be aware that I know I said I wasn't going to do too many details, but this one I am going to mention. So brace yourself. I apologize. This boy was found decapitated. And his genitals were cut off and they were stuffed inside of his mouth. Wow. But see, someone saw this boy before he went missing. They saw him with Lewis. So they had talked to the police and they told the police, you know, this is the last person that, you know, we saw him with. Police bring in Garavito and they start questioning him. And he plays, you know, his little suave way of talking that he has. And he winds up getting out of it. And with that, he, you know, he leaves town. Go figure. He winds up moving over to Pereira, and that's where he kills a 13-year-old. In 1995, Lewis is questioned in reference to another missing boy named Ronald Delgado. But it doesn't lead anywhere at all. He kills another boy who is 13, I'm sorry, named Jorge. Oh, and he's keeping record, which we'll later find out, you know, how they found this. But he actually has a diary at that point that he has already clocked in almost 100 victims in his diary. He also keeps keepsakes in a book bag. And later, obviously, these are going to be used as evidence against him. In 1997... he goes to Bogota and kills an 8-year-old boy named Jimmy and two more that he kidnaps. And, you know, they later find the boys' bodies and they have been raped and tortured and then obviously killed. So he is just, I mean, he's completely eluding police. No one's really looking for these kids. They're orphaned or they're homeless, or, you know, maybe their families are poor and they can't afford a lawyer or, you know, whatever. He is targeting the kids that he's targeting because he knows that he can get away with this. And it's sad and really scary. So many children lost their lives. In Bogota, four more boys were murdered. And in November of 1997, Pereira police discovered a mass grave. By February of 1998, mass graves were being found all over Colombia. They were just popping up everywhere. Now, some people think that this is because, you know, they're farming and they're, you know, prepping the grounds or whatever. And that, you know, since they're digging up the grounds or turning them over, this is why they're finding them. So, tons of mass graves. And when Garavito gets wind of this, he decides he's going to flee to Ecuador. Of course he is. So, when he goes to Ecuador, he changes his name to Bonifacio Marrero. And, of course, he just starts killing kids over there, too. Now, I couldn't get, a body count for him in Ecuador. But if anybody does have that, please feel free to go to my Facebook and let me know that, because I was very curious on how many kids, you know, met their demise because of him over there in Ecuador. Okay, so he's in Ecuador. He starts killing kids, except Ecuadorian police are on top of it. They start looking immediately at, obviously, the new person in town that has a Colombian accent. Clearly, he's not from Ecuador. And they're already looking into him. He feels this. He winds up fleeing back to Colombia. So he goes back to Colombia, and now, mind you, now there's, you know, all these mass graves are popping up, and in like February 1999, these task forces that were formed in all these different police, areas, you know, I'm sorry, I don't know the right word for that, but so all these different towns, their police force was, you know, they were all working separate. But in 1999, they all decided to start working together. So they're all sharing information now. So all of Colombia is just sharing information back and forth so that in hopes that they would be able to capture this person. And so they have a few leads. They have a few people that they're interested in, and Lewis winds up being on this list of suspects. So now we're going to skip ahead to April. April 1999, a 12-year-old boy named Ivan Sabagon, he goes missing. But see, Ivan isn't like the rest of the kids, because Ivan has a family, and his family immediately starts looking for him. See, now this is what Ivan does. Ivan's family is poor. So to help with the cost of schooling and stuff like that, he sells lottery tickets. So he goes out during the day and he sells his lottery tickets, and then he brings back the money so that he can buy, you know, help buy school supplies or whatever else. So he goes and he comes back the same times all the time, you know, like it's just like his job. So the mom, you know, realizes, well, it's getting kind of late and he's not home yet. Let me go and look for him. So she goes and looks, and he's not there where he normally is. So she immediately contacts police and she tells them what's going on. And now they're already, you know, they already have that heightened suspicion when a child is going missing, because they know what's going on. You know, they know that there is a serial killer and rapist that is going around and raping and killing children. So they waste no time. Good for them. They start searching for him. And in the meantime, they get a phone call. And there's a man on the other line. And he says, hey, listen, you know, I was walking by and I saw this little boy and he was being attacked by a man. And he gives a description of the man and he says, you know, I have a little boy with me right now and we're at, you know, such and such store. So the police go there. So what was happening is, you know, obviously Lewis, he was like, there was like an altercation going on, like a physical altercation between him and Ivan. Ivan was struggling to get away from him. And this homeless man just happened to be walking by during this exact instance. And he saw what was going on and he immediately intervened. Good job, hero. He intervened. He takes Ivan and they run. So they run and they run to like this store. And that's when the man calls the police and lets them know what's going on. So police get there immediately. And they, you know, they get Ivan and he's safe. And now they're like looking for this perpetrator. So they're looking, they can't find him. So they put Ivan in the police car and they start going back to the station. On the way there, Ivan yells out, that's him. And he points to a man that is right outside of the window as they're passing by. Police immediately pull over and they grab this guy and they cuff him and they bring him in for questioning. He gives the name Bonifacio Marrero. Now, if you remember, this is what he called himself when he was in Ecuador. So, you know, we already know it's Lewis. It's not Bonifacio Marrero. At the station, though, detectives that obviously have been looking into the situations that were going on and they know the list of suspects, they look at him and they're like, you know, he kind of looks familiar. He looks like someone that is on this list. So they go through the list and they're like, there's no way. This is not Bonifacio Marrero. This right here is Lewis Garavito. So they begin to question him. And boy, does he tell them a lot. During questioning, Lewis Garavito admits to police that he has killed, not raped, we're not counting those, we're just counting murders. He has murdered at least 172 children, but admits that it can be anywhere from that number up to 300. Could you imagine? Like, that many children, 172 children. That is amazing. Like, he was able to get away with killing all of these children. because he knew that these kids, since most of them were orphaned or, you know, homeless, that no one was looking for them. He picked not only just vulnerable population being children, but even more vulnerable would be orphaned and homeless children. This guy is smart. Smart and very cunning. And he knows exactly what to do. And he was able to do it for so long. It's outstanding. It really is. So police take this number obviously into consideration, and they look at, you know, the graves that they found. And within the mass graves, they found over 114 skeletons. But they do admit that there were other body pieces. I'm sorry, but there were other body pieces that were inside of the mass graves that, they're counting whole skeleton. They're not counting like pieces of, you know, they may find a finger that may have belonged to somebody. You know, like the pieces that they found, I guess they couldn't consider them dead because it could have just been that maybe it was during a torturing process. I know. I'm sorry. I know I said I wasn't going to go into it, but I just wanted to give you guys a little bit better understanding. I apologize. So he admits to all of this, right? And then, you know, I'm sure that you're probably thinking like, wow, like he's going to go away for a long time. I mean, if we think about it, right? If we think about it as if he was to have done this in America, he would get life. Even if he didn't get like lethal injection or something, he would definitely be in jail for life. He would never see the light of day. Well, let's go over his charges and evidence, and then we'll get to exactly how long he is going to spend in prison. So, okay, let's look at the evidence. Now, I know I didn't cover this, but I'm going to just mention it now. It didn't seem like it was that important before, so my apologies. But some of the evidence that they have is obviously his bag of keepsakes that he had. They also had some DNA. I couldn't find if it was, I didn't know what particular DNA it was that they had. You know, I didn't know what part of his body was secreting that DNA. So I don't know. But I'm sure that someone probably mentions it somewhere. I honestly wasn't digging that far to find it. But they had found, amongst his other things, a pair of glasses that were burnt. So they took these glasses in and they had them test it. And it came back that the person that owns those glasses has a very rare, like, eye condition. And so it's, you know, it's a rare eye condition. Okay. It's not like, you know, someone's nearsighted or farsighted. And so when they brought Lewis in and they actually made him do an eye test to find out that, yes, indeed, he does have this rare eye condition. Crazy, right? It's crazy the evidence that they can put together. Also, they looked at like the radius where the bodies were. And I mean, just, it was clearly him. I don't know where there's like any confusion there, but you know, they have to go with evidence, which is fine. So besides all of the evidence and him obviously admitting to the murders, he winds up getting, I guess, X amount of time per murder. So it comes up to like some 800 years, right? Okay, so, but 800 years didn't happen. He wound up getting a chump 30 years due to a loophole from the Colombian government. So he plans on getting out, which, by the way, he can be paroled this year. So he plans on getting out running for some type of government office, and opening up a youth center for abused children. You heard that right, guys. Yeah, he wants to help abused children. I'm sure he does. So, guys, that was the story of Louis Garavito. I really hope that you enjoyed it. This was a lot of fun making. Go over to my Facebook, please. Please go to my Facebook. Give me some comments. Criticize me. Let me know what I can do better. You know, I know that it was probably all over the place today. This is my first time, like I said, so it takes a lot of getting used to. But yeah, so, you know, follow me on Facebook, let me know. And also, just so you guys know, I'm available on Anchor, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Radio Public, and Breaker. So you guys could easily go over there, listen to me, and, you know, leave me a little review. Let me know what you think. I really want to know. Also, I would really appreciate if you guys let me know what you thought of the story. And do you think that he would have done the things that he did if he had a different upbringing? I'm really curious on your guys' take on that, because I know it's very controversial to talk like that, but I'm really curious to know. So this is it. Thank you, guys. This is the end of my very first episode. I'm so excited. I just want to say thank you to my husband, who has been helping me out tremendously. Gave me this awesome microphone set up and helped me with the audio. And he did all of these things for me. And he's been just going out of his way to be very supportive and helping me through all of this. And I really appreciate that. I appreciate my children, you know, knowing that I'm trying to do research and juggle things, and you know, they've just been so great and so understanding, and I really appreciate that. I love them. And to the rest of my family and friends who have been helping me out with research or allowing me to practice with them, I really appreciate it, guys. You know, this means a lot to me. It's a lot, you know. It makes me feel amazing to know that I have this much support from all of those people around me. So thank you all so much. And thank you to everyone that tuned in today to listen. I really appreciate that as well. I'm very excited. Please share it if you liked it. Let me know. Remember, guys, Facebook. Okay? All right. Thank you guys so much. Have a great night.